Starless Night, Part 3, Shadows. There are no shadows in the Underdark. Only after years on the surface have I come to understand the significance of that seemingly minute fact, the significance of the contrast between lightness and darkness. There are no shadows in the Underdark, no areas of mystery where only the imagination can go. What a marvelous thing is a shadow. I have seen my own silhouette walk under me as the sun rode high. I have seen a gopher grow to the size of a large bear, the light low behind him, spreading his ominous silhouette far across the ground. I have walked through the woods at twilight, my gaze alternating between the lighter areas catching the last rays of day, leafy green slipping to gray, and those darkening patches. Those areas where only my mind's eye could go. Might a monster be there? An orc or a goblin? Or might a hidden treasure, as magnificent as a lost enchanted sword, or as simple as a fox's den, lay within the sheltering gloom? When I walk the woods at twilight, my imagination walks beside me, heightens my senses, opens my mind to any possibilities. But there are no shadows in the Underdark, and there is no room for fanciful imagining. All, everywhere, is gripped in the brooding, continual predatory hush and a very real, ever-present danger. To imagine a crouched enemy or a hidden treasure is an exercise in enjoyment, a conjured state of alertness, of aliveness. But when that enemy is too often real and not imagined, when every jag in the stone, every potential hiding place becomes a source of tension, then the game is not so much fun. One cannot walk the corridors of the Underdark with his imagination beside him. To imagine an enemy behind one stone might well blind a person to the very real enemy behind another. To slip into a daydream is to lose that edge of readiness, and in the Underdark, to be unwary is to die. This proved the most difficult transition for me when I went back into those lightless corridors. I had to again become the primal hunter, had to survive every moment on that instinctual edge, a state of nervous energy that kept my muscles always taut, always ready to spring. Every step of the way, the present was all that mattered, the search for potential hiding places of potential enemies. I could not afford to imagine those enemies. I had to wait for them and watch for them, react to any movements. There are no shadows in the Underdark. There is no room for imagination in the Underdark. It is a place for alertness, but not aliveness, a place with no room for hopes and dreams. Drizzt Do'Urden. Chapter 13. Hungry Goddess. Counselor Ferbel of Blindenstone normally enjoyed his journeys out of the deep gnome city, but not this day. The little gnome stood in a small chamber, but its dimensions seemed huge to him, for he felt quite vulnerable. He kicked his hard boots about the rocks on the otherwise smooth floor, twiddled his stubby fingers behind his back, and every so often ran a hand over his almost bald head, wiping away lines of sweat. A dozen tunnels ran into this chamber, and Ferbel took some comfort in the knowledge that 20 of Svarfnebli warriors stood ready to rush to his aid, including several shamans with enchanted stones that could summon elemental giants from the plane of Earth. Ferbel understood the drow of Menzoberranzan, 45 miles to the east of Blindenstone, better than any of his kin, though, and even his armed escort's presence did not allow him to relax. The gnome counselor knew well that if the Dark Elves had set this up as an ambush, then all the gnomes and all the magic of Blinkenstone might not be enough. A familiar clicking sounded from the tunnel directly across the small chamber, and, a moment later, in swept Jarlaxle, the extraordinary drow mercenary, his wide-brimmed hat festooned with a giant diatrima feather, his vest cut high to reveal rolling lines of muscles across his abdomen. He strode before the gnome, glanced about a couple of times to take in the whole scene, then dipped into a low bow, brushing his hat across the floor with an outstretched hand. "My greetings," Jarlaxle said heartily as he came back upright, crooking his arm above him so that the hat tucked against his elbow. A snap of the arm sent the hat into a short spin to land perfectly atop the swaggering mercenary's shaved head.
"I soar your spirits this day," Furbel remarked.
"And why not?" the drow asked. "It's another glorious day in the Underdark. A day to be enjoyed."
Furbel did not seem convinced, but he was amazed, as always, by the conniving drow's command of the Serfneblin language. Drolaxel spoke the tongue as easily and fluidly as any of Blingdenstone's deep gnome inhabitants, though the mercenary used the sentence structure more common to the drow language and not the inverted form favored by many of the gnomes.
"Many Serfneblin mining parties have been assaulted," Furbel said, his tone verging on that of accusation. "Serfneblin parties working west of Blingdenstone."
Drolaxel smiled coyly and held his hands out wide.
"Chednasad?"
he asked innocently, implicating the next nearest drow city.
"Menzoberranzan,"
Furbel asserted. Chednasad was many 10 days away.
"One dark elf wore the emblem of Menzoberranzan House."
"Rogue parties," Drolaxel reasoned. "Young fighters out for pleasure."
Furbel's thin lips almost disappeared with his ensuing scowl. Both he and Drolaxel knew better than to think that the raiding drow were simply young rowdies. The attacks had been coordinated and executed perfectly, and many Serfnebli had been slain.
"What am I to say?"
Drolaxel asked innocently. "I am but a pawn to the events about me." Furbel snorted.
"I thank you for your confidence in my position," the mercenary said without missing a beat. "But really, dear Furbel, we have been over this before. The events are quite out of my hands this time."
"What events?"
Furbel demanded. He and Drolaxel had met twice before over the last 2 months, discussing this very issue, for the drow activity near the Serfneblin city had increased dramatically. At each meeting, Drolaxel had slyly alluded to some great events, but never had he come out and actually told Furbel anything.
"Have we come to banter this same issue?" the mercenary asked warily. "Really, dear Furbel, I grow tired of you."
"A drow we have captured,"
Furbel interrupted, crossing his short but burly arms over his chest, as though the news should carry some weight. Jarlaxle's expression turned incredulous, and he held his hands out wide again as if to ask,
"So?"
"We believe this drow is a native of Menzoberranzan,"
Furbel went on.
"A female?"
Jarlaxle asked, thinking that the gnome, apparently viewing this information as vital, must be referring to a high priestess. The mercenary hadn't heard of any missing high priestesses, except, of course, Jurlis Horlbar, and she wasn't really missing.
"A male,"
Furbel replied, and again the mercenary's expression turned dubious.
"Then execute him,"
the pragmatic Jarlaxle reasoned. Furbel tightened his arms across his chest and began tapping his foot impatiently on the floor.
"Really, Furbel, do you believe that a male drow prisoner gives your city some bargaining power?"
the mercenary asked.
"Do you expect me to run back to Menzoberranzan pleading for this one male? Do you expect that the ruling matron mothers will demand that all activity in this area be ceased for his sake?"
"Then you admit sanctioned activity in this area,"
the Serfneblin retorted, pointing a stubby finger Drolaxel's way and thinking he had caught the mercenary in a lie.
"I speak merely hypothetically," Drolaxel corrected. "I was granting you your presumption so that I might correctly mirror your intentions."
"My intentions you do not know, Drolaxel,"
Furbel assured. It was clear to Drolaxel, though, that the gnome was growing agitated by the mercenary's cool demeanor. It was always that way with Drolaxel. Furbel met with the drow only when the situation was critical to Blingdenstone, and often his meetings cost him dearly in precious gems or other treasures.
"Name your price, then,"
the gnome went on.
"My price?
imperiled is my city," Firbol said sharply, "and Jarlaxle knows why."
The mercenary did not respond. He merely smiled and leaned back from the gnome.
"Jarlaxle knows, too, the name of this drow we have taken."
Firbol went on, in turn trying to be sly. For the first time, the mercenary revealed, albeit briefly, his intrigue. Firbol really hadn't wanted to take the conversation this far. It was not his intent to reveal the prisoner's identity. Drizzt Do'Urden was, after all, a friend of Belwar Dizengulp, the most honored borough warden. Drizzt had never proven himself an enemy of Blingenstone, had even aided the Svirfnebli a score of years before when he first had passed through the city, and by all accounts, the rogue drow had helped Svirfnebli again on his return, out in the tunnels against the drow kin. Still, Firbol's first loyalty was to his own people and his city, and if giving Drizzt's name to Jarlaxle might aid the gnomes in their current predicament, might reveal the imposing events that Jarlaxle kept hinting at, then, to Firbol, it would be worth the price. Jarlaxle paused for a long while, trying to figure out where he should take this suddenly meaningful conversation. He figured that the drow was some rogue male, perhaps a former member of Breg and D'Arth, presumed lost in the outer tunnels. Or maybe the gnomes had bagged a noble from one of the higher-ranking houses. A fine prize indeed. Jarlaxle's ruby eyes gleamed at the thought of the profit such a noble might bring to Breg and D'Arth.
"He has a name?" the mercenary asked.
"A name that is known to you and to us," Firbol replied, feeling positively superior, a rare occurrence in his dealings with the crafty mercenary.
His cryptic answer, though, had given more information than intended to Jarlaxle. Few drow were known by name to the gnomes of Blingenstone, and Jarlaxle could check on the whereabouts of most of those few quite easily. The mercenary's eyes widened suddenly, but he quickly regained his composure, his mind reeling down the path of new possibilities.
"Tell me of the events," Firbol demanded.
"Why are men Zabarans and drow near Blingenstone? Tell me, and to you I shall give the name."
"Give the name if you choose," Jarlaxle scoffed. "The events? I have already told you to look to Chednasad, or to playful young males, students perhaps out of the academy."
Firbol hopped up and down, fists clenched in front of him as though he meant to jump over and punch the unpredictable mercenary. All feelings that he had gained the upper hand washed away in the blink of a drow eye.
"Dear Firbol," Jarlaxle cooed, "really, we should not be meeting unless we have more important matters to discuss. And really, you and your escort should not be so far from home, not in these dark times."
The little Svirfneblin let out an unintentional groan of frustration at the mercenary's continued hints that something dire was going on, that the increased drow activity was linked to some greater design. But Jarlaxle, standing with one arm across his belly, his elbow in his hand and the other hand propping his chin, remained impassive, seeming positively amused by it all. Firbol would get no pertinent information this day, he realized. So he gave a curt bow and spun about, kicking stones every step of the way out of the chamber. The mercenary held his relaxed posture for some time after the gnome had left, then casually lifted one hand and signaled to the tunnel behind him. Out walked a human, though his eyes glowed red with the infravision common to Underdark races, a gift from a high priestess.
"Did you find that amusing?" Jarlaxle asked in the surface tongue. "And informative," Intreri replied. "When we get back to the city, it shouldn't be a minor thing for you to discern the identity of the captured drow."
Jarlaxle regarded the assassin curiously.
"Do you not already know it?" he asked.
"I know of no missing nobles," Intreri replied,
taking time as he spoke to carefully study the mercenary. Had he missed something?
"Certainly their prisoner must be a noble, since his name was known not only to you, but to the gnomes. A noble or an adventurous drow merchant."
Suppose I told you that the Drow in Blingdenstone was no prisoner, Jarlaxle hinted, a wry smile on his ebon-skinned face. Entreri stared at him blankly, apparently having no clue as to what the mercenary was talking about.
Of course, Jarlaxle said a moment later. You do not know of the past events, so you would have no way of putting the information together. There was once a drow who left Menzoberranzan and stopped, for a time, to live with the gnomes, though I hardly expect that he would return.
You cannot be hinting that, Entreri said,
verily losing his breath.
Precisely, Jarlaxle replied,
turning his gaze to the tunnel through which Firbol had disappeared. It seems that the fly has come to the spiders. Entreri did not know what to think.
Drizzt Do'Urden, back in the Underdark. What did that mean for the planned raid on Mithril Hall? Would the plans be dropped? Would Entreri's last chance to see the surface world be taken from him?
What are we to do?
He asked the mercenary, his tone hinting at desperation.
Do?
Jarlaxle echoed. He leaned back and gave a hearty laugh.
Do?
The drow asked again, as though the thought was absurd.
Why, we sit back and enjoy it, of course.
His response was not totally unexpected to Entreri, not when the assassin took a moment to consider it. Jarlaxle was a lover of ironies. That was why he thrived in the world of the chaotic drow, and this unexpected turn certainly qualified. To Jarlaxle, life was a game to be played and enjoyed without consideration for consequences or morality. In other times, Entreri could empathize with that attitude, had even adopted it on occasion, but not now. Too much hung in the balance for Artemis Entreri, for the poor, miserable assassin. Drizzt's presence so near Menzoberranzan raised important questions for the assassin's future, a future that looked bleak indeed. Jarlaxle laughed again, long and hard. Entreri stood solemnly, staring at the tunnel that led generally toward the gnome city, his mind staring into the face, the violet eyes, of his most hated enemy. Drizzt took great comfort in the familiar surroundings about him. He almost felt like that he must be dreaming, for the small stone dwelling was exactly as he remembered it, right down to the hammock in which he now found himself. But Drizzt knew that this was no dream, knew it from the fact that he could feel nothing from his waist down, neither the hammock's cords nor even a tingle in his bare feet.
"Awake?"
came a question from the dwelling's second smaller chamber. The word struck Drizzt profoundly, for it was spoken in the Svefneblen tongue, that curious blend of elven melodies and crackling dwarven consonants. Svefneblen words rushed back to Drizzt's thoughts, though he had never heard nor spoken the language in more than 20 years. It took some effort for Drizzt to turn his head and see the approaching Burrow Warden. The drow's heart skipped a few beats at the sight. Belwar had aged a bit, but still seemed sturdy. He banged his hands together when he realized that Drizzt, his long-ago friend, was indeed awake. Drizzt was pleased to see those hands, works of metallic art, capping the gnome's arms. Drizzt's own brother had cut off Belwar's hands when Drizzt and Belwar had first met. There had been a battle between the deep gnomes and a party of drow, and, at first, Drizzt had been Belwar's prisoner. Dinan came fast to Drizzt's aid, though, and the positions were quickly reversed. Dinan would have killed Belwar had it not been for Drizzt, but Drizzt wasn't sure how much his attempt to save the Svefneblen's life had been worth, for Dinan had ordered Belwar crippled. In the brutal Underdark, crippled creatures usually did not survive long. When Drizzt had met Belwar again, when he had come into Blingdenstone as a refugee from Menzoberranzan, he had found that the Svefnebli, so unlike the drow, had come to their wounded friend's aid, crafting him apropos caps for his stubby arms. On the right arm, the most honored Burrow Warden, as the deep gnomes called Belwar, wore a mithril hammerhead etched with marvelous runes and sketchings of powerful creatures, including an earth elemental. The double-headed pickaxe Belwar wore on his left arm was no less spectacular. These were formidable tools for digging and fighting, and, more formidable still,
for the Surfneblin shamans had enchanted the hands. Drizzt had seen Belwar burrow through solid stone as fast as a mole through soft dirt. It was so good to see that Belwar had continued to thrive, that Drizzt's first non-drow friend, Drizzt's first true friend other than Zach Nefane, was well.
"Mega Komora elf,"
the Surfneblin remarked with a chuckle as he walked past the hammock.
"I thought you would never wake up."
"Mega Komora," Drizzt's mind echoed. "By the stones." The curious phrase, one that Drizzt had not heard in 20 years, put the drow at ease, brought his thoughts cascading back to the peaceful time he had spent as Belwar's guest in Blingdenstone. He came out of his personal thoughts and noticed that the Srebneblin was at his feet, studying his posture.
"How do they feel?" Belwar asked.
"They do not," Drizzt replied. The gnome nodded his hairless head and brought his pickaxe up to scratch his huge nose.
"You got nookered," he remarked.
Drizzt did not reply, obviously not understanding.
"Nookered,"
Belwar said again, moving to a cabinet bolted to the wall. He hooked the door with his pickaxe and swung it open, then used both hands to tentatively grasp some item inside and take it out for Drizzt to see.
"A newly designed weapon," Belwar explained. "Been around for only a few years."
Drizzt thought that the item resembled a beaver's tail, with a short handle for grasping on the narrow end and with the wide end curled over at a sharp angle. It was smooth all about, with the notable exception of a serrated edge.
"A nooker,"
Belwar said, holding it up high. It slipped from his tentative grasp and dropped to the floor. Belwar shrugged and clapped his mithril hands together.
"A good thing it is that I have my own weapons."
Belwar banged the hammer and pickaxe together a second time.
"Lucky you are, Drizzt Duarden," he went on, "that the Srebneblee in battle recognized you for a friend."
Drizzt snorted. He didn't, at that moment, feel very lucky.
"He could have hit you with the sharp edge," Belwar went on. "Cut your backbone in half, it would have."
"My backbone feels as if it has been cut in half," Drizzt remarked.
"No, no,"
Belwar said, walking back to the bottom of the hammock.
"Just nookered."
The gnome poked his pickaxe hard against the bottom of Drizzt's foot, and the drow winced and shifted.
"See? Coming back already is the feeling,"
Belwar declared, and, smiling mischievously, he prodded Drizzt again. "I will walk again, Burrow Warden," the relieved drow promised, his tone threatening so that he could play along with the game. Belwar poked him again.
"A while will that be," he laughed. "And soon you will feel a tickle as well."
It seemed like old times to Drizzt. It seemed like the very pressing problems that had burdened his shoulders had been temporarily lifted. How good it was to see his old friend again, this gnome who had gone out with him, out of loyalty alone, into the wilds of the Underdark, who had been captured beside Drizzt by the dreaded Mind Flayers and had fought his way out beside Drizzt. It was a coincidence, fortunate for both me and your fellows in the tunnels, that I happened to be in the area when I did," Drizzt said.
"Not so much a chance of fate,"
Belwar replied, and a grim demeanor clouded his cheerful expression.
"The fights have become too common. One a 10 day at least, and many Srefnebli have died."
Drizzt closed his lavender eyes and tried to digest the unwelcome news.
"Loth is hungry, so it is said," Belwar went on. "And life has not been good for the gnomes of Blindenstone. The cause of it, all we are trying to learn."
Drizzt took it all in stride, feeling then, more than ever before, that he had done right in returning. More was happening than a simple drow attempt to recapture him. Belwar's description, the assertion that Loth was hungry, seemed on the mark. Drizzt got prodded again, hard, and he popped open his eyes to see the smiling Burrow Warden staring down at him, the cloud of recent events apparently past.
"But enough of that darkness," Belwar declared. 20 years we have to recall. You for me, and me for you."
He reached down and hooked one of Drizzt's boots, lifting it up and sniffing at the sole.
"You found the surface?"
he asked, sincerely hopeful. The two friends spent the rest of the day trading tales with Drizzt, who had gone into so different a world, doing most of the talking. Many times Belwar gasped and laughed. Once he shared tears with his drow friend, seeming sincerely hurt by the loss of Wulfgar. Drizzt knew at that moment that he had rediscovered another of his dearest friends. Belwar listened intently, with caring, to Drizzt's every word. Let him share the most personal moments of his last 20 years with the silent support of a true friend. After they dined that night, Drizzt took his first tentative steps, and Belwar, who had seen the debilitating effects of a well-wielded nooker before, assured the drow that he would soon be running along rubble-filled walls again in a day or so. That news came as a mixed blessing. Drizzt was glad that he would heal, of course, but a small part of him wished that the process would take longer, that he might extend his visit with Belwar. For Drizzt knew that the moment his body was able, the time would be at hand for him to finish his journey to return to Menzoberranzan and try to end the threat.